Once there was a tree, and she loved a little boy. There's so much nostalgia in these words. A warm feeling of childhood, of my mother's voice reading aloud to me, of hugs and snuggles and laughter, of funny pictures sketched of the barefoot boy swinging from branches. And the tree, the tender, constant, and unfailing love of the tree. And yet, reading this book as an adult raised all kinds of questions for me. Questions like, how naive was I? I missed so much as a child. I saw the story as a central tale of kindness and giving. What I didn't see was hurt. What I didn't see was the suffering and the cost of that generosity. What I didn't see was the criticism and the exploration of aging and motherhood. Now I see all of these things. I like the expression, "Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater." I wanted to talk today about what it would look like to explore the book through both our childhood joy and wonder, as well as through the lens of our adult critical thinking. For starters, I wanted to talk about the author. Shel Silverstein will always be a favorite of mine. Whether I'm feeling under the weather or the kind of sick you might call a mental health day, when you know you're going to go to work, but you just don't feel like it, it's those moments I find myself reciting down the hall to my partner, "I cannot go to school today," said little Peggy Ann McKay. "I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash, and purple bumps. I counted 16 chicken pox, and there's one more that's 17, and don't you think my face looks green?" It's ingrained in my memory since probably age 8. I know most of the poem by heart. For those unfamiliar with these words, they're from the poem Sick, from Shel Silverstein's Where the Sidewalk Ends. Silverstein painted a world of imagination for kids and adults alike. He filled our minds with a man being eaten by a boa constrictor, a never-ending trash heap, Captain Hook and his peanut butter sandwich, a girl who eats a whale, a hug-o-war, a sister for sale, and the giving tree. Just a few of the stories that roll out of my mind when I think of Silverstein's writing. What we may not be as comfortable acknowledging is that he gave us honesty. Reading about his life from an article in The New Yorker, I discovered Silverstein never set out to write happy children's stories. Silverstein detested happy endings. His own Up by the Bootstraps childhood was marked with insecurity and self-doubt. He was born in 1930 on the northwest side of Chicago and grew up in a second-story apartment crowded with family. His parents were an immigrant father from Eastern Europe and a Chicago-born mother who opened an unsuccessful bakery on the heels of the Great Depression. He discovered his passion for drawing early and became his refuge from his wrathful father. He was listless, and he loved cartoons, and he found an unexpected outlet in the military, which he joined in 1953 and served on a newspaper on a troop ship in Japan. His break came 3 years later when, discharged and unemployed, he visited the offices of a fledgling magazine for men and met its editor, an avid cartoonist himself, Hugh Hefner. And so began Silverstein's long association with Playboy, where he published not only cartoons and illustrations, but travel logs from Tokyo and Paris and Moscow, and became a regular fixture at the infamous Playboy Mansion. Silverstein never intended to write or draw for children. He often was impatient around kids and made no secret of the contempt he felt for most children's books. To quote him, he said, "A kid's already scared of being small and insignificant, so what does E.B. White give them? A mouse who's afraid of being flushed down the toilet or rolled up in a window shade, and a spider who's getting ready to die." Silverstein's life, as you might have started to grasp, was dark and more colorful than many of us could have imagined. So what is the takeaway from the author and this book, and how do they relate to kindness? The short answer is it's complicated. Maybe Silverstein was simply writing a book about a relationship between two people. He was often quoted as describing this when they asked him what The Giving Tree was about. Maybe he was bitter and jaded from his childhood, and the boy in the book represents some of his own struggle. It seems he knew what it was like to want more from life. But as I stated at the beginning, what I do know is that Silverstein gave us honesty. What is most profoundly important about The Giving Tree is what we, as the reader, take away. A child relates to the constancy of the tree and the ingratitude of the boy. The safety of the tree as home, not judging, but only accepting. Rereading it as an adult, we are faced with the reality that we are not the same anymore. You have grown and you have changed. And now we can see new themes emerge. I recently found myself talking about Buddhism at work. For those of you that don't know, when I'm not serving the congregation, I've had lots of Park Service jobs, and so this was not a normal conversation for the National Park Service Visitor Center. But it got me thinking about this sermon in The Giving Tree. My friend was using themes from Buddhism to help her deal with a troubling situation in her personal life. She was sharing with me the gratitude her realizations had provided for her. She remembered how Buddhism teaches us to see someone through their actions, that someone who acts unkindly towards you is also likely unkind toward themselves, how the pain they inflict on you might very well show you the pain they themselves are experiencing in their lives. This doesn't excuse the action, but it's always been helpful to me to remind myself of our principles, specifically the inherent worth and dignity of every person, that we as Unitarian Universalists are committed to respecting the inherent dignity and worth of each person, that we don't have to like everyone to respect everyone, that we don't have to like the boy in the story to see his inherent worth and dignity. In fact, Buddhism may help us see even more in this story. Buddhism gives us hope of freedom from suffering by teaching us to let go of attachment. The tree is maybe the best Buddhist I have ever known, because she knew that love was not gained from giving, not from having, but from giving. Receiving a gift is a joy that lasts only as long as the gift remains new. When we give a gift, that sense of sharing, connecting, providing joy is written on our hearts. It stays with us, renewed in every remembrance. The tree was not seeking anything in return. And what we don't see in the story is the love that may have bloomed in the boy from her actions. What else might we see as an adult? You might now experience this book as an environmentalist, fiercely aware of how your ideas of resource management have changed. You might read it as a mom and wonder, how much have you given away to your children? Would you have given less now or more Or was it just the right amount? You might read it with wisdom and see the way aging changes a person and what they can no longer do or offer the world. You might see the concerns of abuse. You might, though, still see the love as I do. Love that calls kindness into action. The love that can be so all-consuming we don't see ourselves anymore. The dangers of that kind of love without the balance of self. Kindness can only be born from our experience of suffering. I liked that idea from the opening reading. That before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for." We learn kindness does not exist in a vacuum. We are kind because we ourselves have experienced kindness. And maybe this is selfish, but it seems true to me. Unlike the story of the noodle thief, we often make kindness seem all too easy. And sure, little day-to-day actions are easy. Holding a door open, offering a hug, dropping a penny in the leave-a-penny, take-a-penny cup. Cleaning the kitchen or mowing the lawn for your spouse. Staying a few minutes late to help a coworker. I hope these are easy. But the Giving Tree reminds me about the huge gracious acts of kindness, which the tree did again and again. And maybe we don't do all of them. We probably shouldn't do all of them. But maybe over the course of our lives, we do a few. May we have the courage to give the noodles to the thief. May we be both selfless and selfish. The Giving Tree still has lessons to teach us. Like, life's not about keeping score, and you can't outrun your problems. And we should spend more time thinking about what we need and not what we want. And what is most important? Riches or community. For me, I'm still not letting go that the Giving Tree can teach us about kindness.